Welcome to the Mind on My Money podcast presented by Pinnacle Trust, hosted by RebelGrove.com publisher Neil McCready and Pinnacle Trust financial guru Martin Palomo. The Mind on My Money podcast tackles the financial questions we're all thinking about, from paying for college to saving for retirement, from life insurance needs to 401ks and everything in between. The goal is to help you take the stress out of financial concerns and give you some tips to enjoy life while your mind is on your money. Now here are your hosts, Neil McCready and Martin Palomo.
Welcome to another edition of Mind on My Money. Presented by Pinnacle. I'm Neil McCready. Martin Palomo with me here today as well. I guess this is our first episode of 2020. That's a long time from now. I don't think either one of us will make it to 2020.
I don't think so, unless they like biofreeze or cryogenically freeze our bodies.
Yeah, you never know. I mean,
we might be close to that.
Never know these days. So anyway, 2022, we are here, thank goodness, and glad you are with us as well. Hope you had a happy new year, and welcome into the first episode of this show. I'll tell you real quick, I'm coming to you from Clark Ford Studios. It's Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. Call it. Ask for Corey Clark. You know the rest. You only have about 30 minutes because Oxford was, they did the right thing. It's not criticism. I'm very, very proud of the Oxford School District right now. You'd have to push me to criticize them. But the weather forecast called for potentially bad weather this morning, and so they pushed the start time back two hours.
Start.
Yeah, and so I had to get Carson to school, and that delayed
us.
What's going on at Pinnacle?
First things first, man.
What's going on at Pinnacle?
Man, we are rocking and rolling. It's funny. I mean, my day is slam busy today. Most of it having to do with nothing related to serving clients. It's meeting with CPAs, doing, you know, getting our new signage, all kinds of, you know, admin stuff, it feels like. But I'm busy tomorrow. I'm on the road. I've got to go up to kind of your neck of the woods, man. I'm going to be in the Tupelo area, and I may actually swing over to Corey's spot on my way back over in Amory.
You should.
Little side note, man. I guess when they announced the F-150 Lightning, I made a reservation. I'm sorry, I have not pre-ordered because orders have not started yet for our area. And you know, you pay $100, and if you don't, you know, if you don't do your pre-order, they give you your $100 back. And anyway, you know, Ford's been in the news a lot in the last couple of days because they've said they're gonna, you know, double their manufacturing of the F-150 Lightnings. But and it's kind of, you know, it's novel. I really like what the F-150 Lightning is all about. The frunk seems really awesome. I know, you know, you have an F-150 also. I have an F-150, and you know, when I'm traveling with the family, it's really comfortable traveling. And I have a bed cover, you know, in the back, so we're able to put a lot of stuff back there. But you know, like I don't stick my folded, like my nice shirts and all that stuff, you know, in the trunk because it still can get dust and dirt and all that stuff in there. Anyway, I'm going on a little tangent, but so the idea of the frunk, I was like, man, that's really cool. It's more storage space, or you could put a cooler up there or whatever. So I kind of got all excited and I put in my reservation, and the guy, and they're only doing it through like certain dealerships, you know, in your area. So you can't go to just any dealership and do it. Anyway, long story short, it looks like Mississippi is going to be a while before they're even available for us. I think they're going to service California and New York first. Anyway, long story short, this does have a financial related decision to it, which is why I'm kind of telling the story. So my truck, which is going to make me sound really, probably really snotty, and I don't mean for it to. I have a Lariat, you know, F-150 Lariat. I have the V6, so I have like the baby truck. You know, it's not four-wheel drive. It doesn't have the, you know, the big monster, V8, you know, that all of the most Mississippi dudes have. But I got the Lariat package because it's really comfortable, and I travel a lot for work. And I mean, I put about 30,000 miles a year on the truck. And so I've just rolled over the 100,000 mile mark, And I've had the truck for like 3.5 years. And, you know, I was kind of anticipating on the Lightning, but then I started thinking, I was like, man, interest rates are about to rise. You know, my truck is not going to gain more value from here till, you know, a year or 2 years when I could take delivery of an F-150 Lightning. And so I was kind of like, man, maybe I just need to bite the bullet and just get a normal truck for my next truck. And, you know, you can still get like through Ford credit, you can get 0%, you know, financing. And that's not going to, it's not going to be like that long because interest rates are rising. The Fed, you know, made that announcement yesterday confirming that they're going to start raising rates, you know, this year. And then the tech market, NASDAQ and S&P kind of went haywire. We can talk about all that stuff. So anyway, I just gave you a long diatribe of my brain thought of why I'm going to go see Corey. Probably going to try to go see him tomorrow afternoon when I get finished in Tupelo. So I know that wasn't on the docket, man, but it is, you know, for people that are thinking about either refinancing your house or if you're in the market for a new vehicle, our window is closing for the super low interest rates. So I'd say, you know, probably pull the trigger if you're in that. And we're doing a refinance on our house right now too. So I'm all over the place this morning.
So what's going on? You said there's kind of an active time with things going on with the Fed and that kind of thing. Fill me in.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So, you know, usually kind of January is a really important month for markets historically. You know, they've said kind of the old wives' tale is, you know, as January goes, so goes the year. And so if you have, generally speaking, if you have a really bad January, it ends up meaning that, you know, year's going to be tough to recover. If you have really good Januaries, generally the years have been good. And so the Fed, you know, the Fed had made the announcement last month that they were going to begin tapering, which we already knew that. It's not new news, you know, and that they thought they were going to, you know, start raising rates sooner than they had previously expected. And so the Fed news that came out yesterday was really just confirming what they had said previously, but they did say, you know, that the economy is strong enough and in good enough shape that that they are going to go ahead and start, you know, raising rates, which is going to be tough for you know, core bonds in the portfolio. And man, it's also kind of tough for firms that are really like the tech firms that don't have a lot of earnings, which it's kind of crazy to think about. You know, there's a company that has values that doesn't have earnings. But it's mostly the reason those firms don't have profits at the end of the year is because they're reinvesting every bit of cash flow that they get into developing new stuff or their technology or something new. And so they use a lot of leverage. So they'll use debt to, you know, to help the company continue to be able to meet its bills, pay its staff or invest into the company. Well, as debt gets more expensive because the Fed raises rates, then those firms, you know, it's they're going to have less cash flow at the end of the year because they're having to pay higher interest rates to service their debt. So what ends up happening is the price of those, you know, those growth stocks or those tech stocks generally tend to fall when the cost of debt is going to rise. So on the other hand, you know, you kind of saw like a two-faced market, not yesterday, but the day before, where the Dow was up, you know, I don't know, 1.5%. The S&P and the NASDAQ were down, but it's because generally the Dow is pretty heavy with, it's only 30 stocks in the Dow, and it's pretty heavy with those stocks that are kind of blue chip, you know, older companies that are established. And they have cash, they have strong cash flows, they pay dividends. So, you know, a company that doesn't need to depend on debt, it doesn't matter what, you know, the interest rates are doing. And so folks will flock from those growers that need debt to grow to those, you know, more stable companies that have cash flow coming in and they know they're going to get a dividend. So you kind of saw the Dow go up and then the S&P and the NASDAQ go down. But, you know, there's a term that was called taper tantrum a couple years ago where markets kind of went haywire because the Fed started raising rates. But I don't think we're going to have that experience this time. I think there will be a little bit of like a little tremors, for lack of a better word, for a couple days. And then, you know, and then markets will pick back. I think we're going to have a good year in the markets, you know, this year. We just kind of started off with a stumble. And man, that's kind of really, we haven't had a lot of client calls or anything like that, but, you know, that's kind of what's going on. And then the other thing I look at is the fear indicator, the VIX, V-I-X. It's still been below 20 during all of this, which means like if the VIX gets above 20, there's a lot of volatility. If it's below 20, you know, that's not a lot of volatility, which is kind of, it's been below 20, meaning there's not a lot of fear in the markets, but the market's kind of tanked as people doing some, you know, the S&P and NASDAQ tanked as the Fed started, you know, talking about rate hikes, and the Dow did not. So man, it's a, you know, if people are using rules of thumbs to invest, it's kind of a confusing, it's a confusing period right now. If you're like, you know, oh, rates are going up, stocks must be going down. No, not necessarily. You know, and then the VIX is, the fear indicator is below the level of fear. So, it's a bipolar marketplace right now, man. Yeah. I definitely wouldn't be making decisions based on emotions today.
Let's see. I'm looking for some headlines. Yeah, it's because it's weird. Like, I'm watching the media start taking some big steps back from COVID fear, which makes me believe that, oh, I can't believe I'm saying this out loud. I am really jinxing it. Knocked on the wood. It makes me think that by summertime, we're going to be over this. This is, we're moving on. Not everyone will, because some people have been, there's two types of people that are hanging on to COVID pretty hard, okay? It's the people who are legitimately scared. They have been mentally scarred. They have been emotionally scarred, and they are scared, and we have done damage to those people, and it's going to take them a long time for them to recover, and many of them will never recover. We have ruined mental health permanently for some people. There's no question about that. And then there are people who love the addiction of virtue, and they're not going to let it go willingly. It appears, however, that there's a lot of other people that are. The mayor of New York, for example, has been very vocal. The mayor of Chicago, for God's sake, came out against the teachers, like, get your ass back to work. That was fascinating. You know, there's New York's Omicron surge points to a wave of mild cases. There's just a lot going on. Makes me think that we're going to get back to some sense of normalcy there. It's also a midterm year now that we're into 2022. In November, there's going to be a lot of politicians up for election. I think you're going to see a lot of politicians step down instead of lose. But there's going to be a lot of new faces. So the fear market is interesting to me, because I don't know about you, but I kind of anticipate a little bit of a rebound in terms of that. I think there's going to be more people who begin to get out and get aggressive with trying to get back to normalcy, and that includes financially. But maybe I'm completely off.
No, I mean, I think we're ready for it, man. And the markets came kind of and have been for even the last two waves, you know. And I know the Delta wave was, I guess I hate to say more severe. It wasn't as mild as this Omicron wave seems to be. But the market shrugged both off. I think the financial markets are ready for some normalcy. They're ready for interest rate normalcy as well, because I mean, really, the markets have kind of been shrugging off a lot of what the Fed has been saying about, you know, rates coming up. And, you know, and there used to be some things that were, you know, that were like, pardon the pun here, but solid gold, you know, strategies when markets were in disarray or there was inflation, and that was gold and silver. And, you know, and neither of those have done their job in an inflationary period. And, you know, and a lot of folks, including myself, have said, well, gosh, I wonder if that's because, you know, like the entrance of crypto and quote unquote digital gold and Bitcoin has been the solution. But man, the crypto's kind of been getting wrecked in kind of the it looks like it's tracking more the tech stocks than anything else. And we already know that crypto is super volatile, but it's like a lot of the things that used to work for little tricks of the trade for investing in different types of environments are not working. And it's interesting to see how this is all going to play out. I mean, the dollar, even in all of this stuff, has remained, relatively strong, which is good for the U.S. consumer. It's really an interesting, it's an interesting scenario right now. Your textbook, here's what to do when plays, have not worked in 2 years. So, it's really taking some creativity to navigate, these markets. I mean, and dude, and oil is, continuing to keep its level. So, that's good, man. Oil needs to be at a $75 to $80 range, for it to be not kill us at the pump, but good enough for the energy sector to make some money. Cause for the Southeast, man, that's a huge part of our economy is the energy sector. So it's important for us. And I don't know, man, it kind of feels like the market's bipolar right now. I just wouldn't be making any crazy decisions.
So here's a couple other headlines.
With my retirement.
Along those lines, consumer demand for goods drove rise in imports during the holidays. The U.S. trade deficit widened to $80.2 billion in November, close to a record high due to strong demand and an easing of supply chain issues. Jobless claims hold near historic lows.
Yep.
I'm digging into that one just a little bit to see what that kind of first couple of graphs of that.
Yeah, I mean, it cropped up a little bit recently, but I think it was 207,000 was the most recent jobless claim, but that's still low, man. But that points to a healthy economy.
Yeah, the lowest since 1969.
Yeah, it points to a healthy economy. And so it makes sense for the Fed to start raising rates again. It's easy money. Easy money has been some of the issues with inflation, too. I mean, because if you think about it, I mean, everyone's accounts have, if you were invested in the last 2 years, even if your percentage of stocks was, not as high as your neighbors, you still made money. And there was money grew. And that's some of the inflation, issue too, is that there's ample supply of money out there. And when demand outweighs supply, the price of goods and services are going to go up.
I've got a daughter that's about to get into the job market here in a couple of years, another that's just a couple of years behind her. Who knows what it'll be like by then, but this is three paragraphs from the Wall Street Journal that's fascinating. I mean, this is like real life right here. This is...
Hit me with it, man.
It's my good friend, Gabriel T. Rubin.
I know Gabriel.
I know that Mr. and Mrs. Rubin listen to the show routinely. Gabriel made it.
They live in New York, man.
Yeah.
They're my buddies.
The labor market's recovery from the worst of the pandemic could be threatened by the rapid rise in infection, blah, blah, blah. But with job openings at record highs and an unprecedented number of Americans quitting their jobs in recent months, including 4.5 million in November, employers may bear the brunt of the impact from another season of public health disruptions. Employee confidence is extremely high. There are so many choices, said Paul McDonald, senior executive director at staffing firm Robert Half International Incorporated. The demand for skilled talent is unprecedented right now. There have been more than 10 million job openings every month since June 2021, according to data from the Labor Department and jobs site Indeed. The balance between job seekers and open jobs has gotten so extreme that in November there were nearly two available unemployed workers. There were roughly two available unemployed workers for every three openings. Ahead of Friday's job report, which economists expect to show employers added around 422,000 jobs last month, up from 210,000 in November, any softness in the hiring number can be attributed to the, quote, lack of available workers rather than any weakness in demand for staff, end quote, said James Knightley, chief international economist for ING Bank. basically, if you want to work, you can work.
Yeah, there's a job out there.
And if you're skilled, you can be picky.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think this is for folks who, you know, are in the logistics industry, you know, whether you're, you know, working on trucks or working on trains, or gosh, man, even for probably working for, you know, the big air carriers like, you know, FedEx or UPS. I mean, I imagine if you have any skill or licensure or anything that, you know, that industry is in need of, I mean, I'm not saying that you can go in and name your price, but man, you could probably go in and name your price and, you know, and there's going to be an opportunity, you know, as long as, you know, the government stays out of the, you know, requirements of, you know, vaccination and stuff like that. I mean, government intervention is the one thing that will kill.
Well, and that story's coming, right? This is from our buddy. We were just having drinks with him just the other night. This is from Brent Kendall. I don't know if you remember. Jess Braven stopped in.
Yeah, he was drinking Pinot.
Yeah. The Supreme Court will hold a special session Friday to consider whether the Biden administration can enforce vaccine and testing rules for large private employers and a vaccine mandate for most health care workers. The issue comes to the court on an emergency basis during a record increase in U.S. COVID-19 infections. In a departure from its usual procedures, the court is hearing arguments on cases that haven't been fully aired in lower courts. Technically, the justices, all of whom, according to a court's spokeswoman, are fully vaccinated and have received booster shots, don't have to issue a definitive decision on whether the administration's vaccine rules are lawful. Instead, they are considering whether President Biden's team can implement them now while more detailed litigation continues. The cases, however, will require the justices to assess whether the White House has credible claims that it stayed within legal boundaries as it has sought to use longstanding laws to implement aggressive rules in the name of public health. The answer is likely to decide the fate of the administration's current approach to a virus, blah, blah, blah. Moreover, the court's decision could reset the public health playbook for years to come. The Supreme Court's conservative majority is skeptical of broad claims of federal power and has been considering arguments for reining it in, said Michael Greenberger, a law professor and director at the Center for Health and Homeland Security at the University of Maryland. But with the vaccine cases, the justices, quote, are walking into the jaws of the pandemic, he said, and there may be enough justices who would worry that pulling back the mandates in the middle of the pandemic is a dangerous thing to do. This, in my opinion, will determine much of what does or does not happen from a supply chain standpoint over the next several months.
Yeah, and government can intervene and kill it, or government could step back and let it, you know, breathe and grow. And here's my question too. And this is not me being a smart ass or anything. Let's have a everyday, you know, U.S. American citizen, Martin and Neil.
Okay.
Conversation.
Yep.
about the mandates for, let's just use truck drivers. So okay. Let's say I drive a truck, an 18-wheeler.
Okay.
I go from Jackson to California to pick up a load, right? So I'm driving all by myself in the cab of my truck to California from Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
I realize there might be, you know, I've got to make stops to fuel and, you know, and get something to eat. So I realize there might be some opportunities where I might come into contact with someone who's sick. But let's just, for all intents and purposes, say that, you know, that I don't do that. You know, I don't come into contact with someone. So I'm in my truck all by myself. I drive, you know, the 2-day trip or whatever it takes to get to California from Jackson. I pull up to, you know, I don't know, the docks in Los Angeles to pick up a load. A crane picks these, you know, these boxes up off of the boat, places them into the, I'm going to call it a yard because I have no idea what I'm talking about. And then someone loads that onto a trailer, and then I back up to that trailer and hook up to it and have not had any contact with anyone. I don't load the trailer or the box or whatever it's called. And then I drive back to Jackson, Mississippi from California. How have I put America at risk doing that? I mean, most likely I'm in the 90% of my journey from Jackson to California back to Jackson is spent by myself in my truck cab.
So or sleeping. This is where it's hard for me to do this because I have a really strong opinion about this. But I'll play along. I mean, first, my opinion is that I'm against the mandates. I think the mandates are unconstitutional. I think they're dangerous. I don't like what we're doing to our country. I've listened to enough people who are educated, who have concerns about the vaccine, and I am vaccinated. I am not boosted, but I'm vaccinated. Yep, my wife is vaccinated. She is not boosted. My two daughters are vaccinated. They will not get boosted. And right now, I am defiantly against anyone who wants to vaccinate my 15-year-old son based on the data that I have read and heard. So that's where I'm coming from. So full disclosure. The argument, I suppose, would be that truck driver is going to get out of his truck and go into a Love's. He's going to go into whatever those places are. He's going to have to fill up for gas. He's going to go in. He's going to get food in places. There are rules about how long they can be on the road, and sometimes they'll stop and go to a hotel room.
Sure.
They'll spend the night in a hotel because there are federal laws regarding how long they can be on the road before they have to take a rest.
Or if they have one of those really awesome trucks, they might even have a full-size apartment in the on the back of the cab.
Yeah, sure. But I'm making the argument here.
Yep.
So, the people who believe firmly that, by God, this would be over if everyone would get vaccinated and everyone would get boosted, they would argue that though that unvaccinated truck driver canvassing the country, in this case from Jackson to Los Angeles and then back and then to Detroit and back and then from Jackson to Charlotte and back, which is, kind of the thing that happens with truck drivers, that person is potentially spreading a deadly virus all over the country in haphazard fashion by stopping in, a restaurant somewhere in Tennessee and picking up the virus and then taking it to a hotel room in North Carolina. That's what they would say. I'm a practicalist. I'm a pragmatic person at this point. I said this today about Oxford. They went back to school. They actually lowered the quarantine from 10 to 5, and they did not institute a mask mandate. And a lot of people here in town are furious about it. And a lot of those same people went to New Orleans last weekend and attended a game that had a roof. And
70,000 people. I was there.
And went to bars.
Twice.
Went to bars and went to restaurants.
Because then I went to the Saints game on Sunday.
Sure. Went to bars, went to restaurants, stayed in hotels. Full of people, and those people weren't wearing masks the whole time, and all of those people down there were not vaccinated. A lot of people had fraudulent vaccine cards. In fact, it's kind of become the new thing.
A little side note, the checking of the card, they didn't even look at my card. I mean, they just wanted me to flash that I had a card in my possession. They didn't even look. They didn't ask me for my license, nothing. It was kind of almost laughable. I mean, and not that I'm asking for them to enforce that, but I'm just like, man, why do we even? It's just a placation, right?
Yeah, but to answer your question, we're up against the clock because you've got to go in 7 minutes or less.
Yep.
To answer your question, I'm of the opinion, and I'm watching the New York Times. We always do the Wall Street Journal, but I pay attention to the New York Times every day. I don't subscribe, but I get a thing that they produce, and they're backing off a lot. It's interesting. I have a very strong opinion that the pandemic would end if we'd stop testing. I really believe that. So I don't know what the Supreme Court's going to do. Roberts seems to be a justice who does not like to make change. He sort of likes to keep the status quo, whatever the status quo may be. But in this case, he's got to do one or the other, and he usually is the swing vote on these. If you institute mandates, a lot of people are going to walk off the jobs in that sector that we just got through talking about. And if that happens, the ramifications are real. For the Biden people, that administration, however, if they don't get that win, it is a massive loss for them politically. And at a time when, I don't know if they can afford massive losses politically. On the flip side, in some ways, I wonder if they would like for the Supreme Court to rule against them so that they could say, hey, we tried. But, you know, all these Republicans put these guys up on the court, and this is why we have to stack the court, or this is why this next election is so critical. We cannot allow a Republican to come in and even make the court more conservative. Because I do wonder if they get their way and they get all these mandates in place and truck drivers and others in industries like that walk off the job, and suddenly the supply chain issue becomes critical, meaning you're waiting outside to get groceries. In an election year, that's the end. You lose. Yeah. You lose in that scenario. So it's a really complicated thing, and it's maybe the best segue to as we head into our exit and into a future podcast. It's a complicated topic for the ruling party right now as they go into a year where in American history, the ruling party in a first term loses ground in the midterms almost always. It happened to Clinton. It happened to Bush. It happened to Obama. It happened to Trump. And it will almost certainly happen to Biden. But they would love to minimize the bleeding.
Yeah. And I'm kind of excited this year and I really enjoyed talking about politics, you know, and the impacts of politics and people's investments and portfolios, you know. American politics just fascinates me. And I don't know nearly as much as you do. I'm not as up to speed with it as you are. And I'm glad that I get to play the kind of the village idiot role. But it is fascinating how it works. And I am excited for this year to talk about it and talk about the impacts.
Yeah, I am too. It's going to be this is going to be, one way or the other, a really fascinating year. There's no question about that. And the presence of early November midterm elections that where the Senate and the House are absolutely up for grabs, and where a lot of governorships across the country are up for grabs as we head into what comes on the other side of midterms is the next presidential election. So this is a big year like most years, and this is one that there will be a lot of things for us to talk about, and we'll do it. Here at Mind on My Money, brought to you by Pinnacle. Martin, sorry for the late start. The weather.
Good, man. First things first, man. You got to take care of family. We still got a solid 30 minutes in, so it's good stuff.
Yeah. All right, we'll get to your meeting. I appreciate your time.
I'll
get this posted, and we will be back with you guys next Thursday. At least that's the plan for another edition of Mind on My Money. Thanks again for making us a part of your week. Happy New Year, and we will talk to you soon.